Prescott v. Cracker Barrel Old Country gets case 19-6056. Thank you, counsel. We're ready to hear you. Go ahead.
Mariano Acuña, counsel for the appellant, Mary Nell Prescott. This is an appeal from the district court's summary judgment order in favor of appellee Cracker Barrel on a trip and fall premises liability case. Today, I hope to convince the court that the district court erred first in by misinterpreting Oklahoma premises liability law, and second, by usurping the jury's role as the sole trier of fact. I will first address the court's mistake of law. On page 8 of its summary judgment order, the district court concluded, quote, without the ability to identify what object caused her to fall, how long the object had been present, or why the object was present, the jury would be required to speculate as to the cause of plaintiff's injuries. The district court reached this result by misinterpreting 54 years of Oklahoma Supreme Court precedent on premises liability law. Instead of relying on the most applicable Oklahoma Supreme Court cases, the district court favored an unpublished opinion from the Western District of Oklahoma and two very distinguishable cases. The court relied exclusively on Gillum, that's the Oklahoma Supreme Court case, Nelson, the Western District order, and Ridge, a 10th Circuit opinion. Those three cases are nothing like the case here. Appellant here presented direct evidence of the cause
of the fall. What are the material dispute and facts that remain that should have precluded summary judgment?
Whether there's direct and or circumstantial evidence as to the cause of her fall. And I'm getting to that, Your Honor.
Did res ipsa come up in the arguments?
Res ipsa did not come up in the arguments.
And this is not a res ipsa case?
This is not a res ipsa
Why
case.
Why not?
It is a method of operations case.
Merrill didn't fly out of the window, but...
No. Method of operations cases such as this one, and that comes from the Lingerfeld case, also an Oklahoma Supreme Court case, are somewhat similar to res ipsa cases, right? This doesn't happen absent negligence, except that that would require the court here to assume negligence or presume negligence simply because somebody falls. And that's just not the law in Oklahoma on premises cases.
Because there's a lot of older people that simply fall.
Such as this plaintiff who was 91 years old.
Is this how old this plaintiff was?
90 at the time, 91 going on 92 now.
Does that hurt you or help you?
It helps me. She worked 20 to 30 hours a week. She walked home to and from work at CVS Pharmacy. That's about 8 blocks away. To answer the question, this is not a res ipsa case. This is a methods of operations case. In Lingerfeld, the plaintiff fell when she was in a grocery store and slipped on a strawberry that was not in the produce aisle. In that case, when she walked into the grocery store, there was a display of strawberries in little containers that were not covered by cellophane or plastic or anything. So customers would pick them up, toss them in their carts, and then, you know, push them around, and that would cause strawberries to spill. So plaintiff makes her way down the groceries, we all do, and then eventually slips on a strawberry. In that case, the Lingerfeld again case stands for the proposition that where the methods of marketing or operation of a store owner, such as this appellee, is such that it is more foreseeable that a dangerous condition is likely to occur, then a plaintiff like Ms. Prescott is not required to prove that the defendant had notice of the hazard or dangerous condition.
So if I'm understanding you, without the methods of operations theory, the way we'd look at this case is we'd probably notice the same absence of evidence that the district court did in its order, saying we don't know what she tripped over, we don't know how long it'd been there, so and so. That would make it impossible for you to show negligence, because to show negligence, you would have to show either that the store had put it in the wrong place or somebody else had moved it there and it had been there long enough that if the store was careful, it would have noticed it and put it back where it belonged. Am I Am I correct?
You're on the right track, but I think I can distinguish your okay. hypothetical, Your Honor. Yes, we have methods of operation. But here we also have the planogram, right? The planogram is not a suggestion by corporate to these stores. It is a directive. It says you must place merchandise, all 4,800 items of merchandise, in your stores in these very specific ways. So, yeah, there is okay. evidence here.
But you're acknowledging, I think, by your response, that you haven't proved the sort of case where you're saying they were negligent because they put it outside of the planogram in the wrong place, or they should have discovered the problem sooner and corrected it. You don't have evidence to support those theories, am I correct? I don't see it.
Well, I'm not sure that we cannot interpret their employee, Sarah Wadley's testimony as having knowledge of the fact that that box had been an issue even before.
Yeah, but she testified not only does she go around looking for stuff out of place, but she instructs other people to do it. And since we don't know what was out of place or how long, we can't tell. It would be speculative to say they were negligent by not cleaning up the banana peel off the floor or cleaning up a spill sooner. Am I correct about that?
I'm not sure I can agree with that either. Well, then you're getting to my second point of error, which is if the court... go ahead.
Well, I'm asking that because I want to understand your methods of operation theory. So your methods of operation theory is... Well, in some circumstances, if I'm understanding correctly, in some circumstances, you don't need to put on that sort of evidence because just the way they ran things, this was inevitable and it posed an unnecessary risk. Am I understanding that part?
That is correct. That is one of the ways we get to negligence on a case such as this one. Alternatively, we've argued, if it's not a methods of operation, which clearly is, the planogram itself makes it fall squarely within the methods of operation cases, which then again take it away from the constructive notice or even actual notice cases. But if the court believes that it's not a methods of operations case, then we think we have both constructive and actual knowledge through the text message and testimony of Sarah Wadley. But to answer your question directly, yes. We think the facts of this case, the evidence in this case, makes it fall squarely within the methods of operations cases.
Back to the direct evidence. You say a text message shows that they had noticed it was out of place and didn't correct it in time?
The direct evidence is Ms. Prescott's testimony, where she testified over and over and over again when asked what was it that you tripped on? She said it was merchandise. Admittedly, she never said it was a 12-by-4-inch box. It was green in color.
How does that statement of hers show that someone at the store knew it was in a position where she'd trip long enough that it was negligent not to correct it?
And so unless
you're giving an never mind.
No, her testimony is direct evidence that there was a box protruding from outside the display table, right?
But ordinarily you would then have to show that it had been there long enough that the store was negligent for not putting it back where it belonged.
Yes, and that's what brings us...
Do you have any evidence of that?
Yes, that's what brings us to the inconsistencies or Ms. Wadley's after-the-fact explanation of her text message. So we have the text message in black and white. It's in the record.
What does it say?
It says that she herself had knocked that box over, and that a gentleman, I believe wearing khaki pants and denim shirt, had also reported earlier that day that he had knocked over, and I think she then equivocated and said maybe he didn't knock over the box but hit it with his foot. Saw the same thing.
But she said she put it back in place.
Well, that, yes.
So do you have to believe the first part and not the second part?
Well, that's where the court weighed the evidence, and that's not proper in summary judgment. Yep, the text message says one thing. Then many months after the text message, she goes on and tries to explain outside the text message what that really meant. And what my position is, it's only for the jury to decide if there's an inconsistency between the black and white letter of that text message and her testimony many, many months later now represented by counsel, only the jury can weigh those inconsistencies.
Now, what did you argue with respect to method of operation in district court?
Essentially the same thing, Your Honor. I argued that the planogram itself creates a dangerous condition of which appellee was required to either abate or warn. There's no evidence that they abated or warned.
So Cracker Barrel, because of the way it sets up its doors, is essentially always liable if someone trips over merchandise.
Not always. I'm sure I can come up with some scenario where Cracker Barrel would not be liable, but it's a matter of public policy. That's a great question, Judge Hartz, because we do insist here that it is irresponsible to stock 4,800 items to achieve per square foot sales of $427 per square foot. I mean, at some point, this needs to change. If the method of operation consistently causes people to fall and injure themselves, and there is evidence in the record that the district court did not even comment on of the, I think, 325 people throughout the country who had reported falling or tripping on merchandise in just the 2 years before Ms. Prescott. So you take that 5 years out, we're looking at about 1,200 people. So there is evidence there that the planogram itself and their method of operation, with nothing else, creates a dangerous condition that they must either remove or warn of.
And let's say you want to run a restaurant and you want it to be really cool and quaint. You want it to look old, like it's been here for centuries. And there are steps that are irregular and doorways where you bump your head. I could name a couple. And you're saying that type of plan of organization should, what did you say? It should result in strict liability to the operator?
I'm not arguing strict liability, Your Honor. That's a really good question.
Saying you're arguing. I mean, what is your argument?
My argument, again, is a method of operation argument, right?
What's the case for that proposition?
Lingerfeld v. Winn-Dixie, Texas. It's an Oklahoma Supreme Court case. I'm sorry?
Remind me what it holds.
It holds that when a store owner's method of operation is more likely to create a dangerous condition, a plaintiff then need not prove that the owner had notice of the dangerousness that was created by them. And so that goes to breach, right? First off, it's only for a jury to decide breach. And we're not arguing breach. The ruling of the district court was only as to evidence of proximate cause, of causation. And over and over, the court took the incident report, Sarah Wadley's testimony, Tamlin Welch's affidavit, and found reasons to not find them valid. I do want to touch on, because I've got about 2 minutes, the court's treatment of Tamlin Welch's affidavit. Ms. Welch was very specific in saying that. Sorry?
Was that an Oklahoma case?
Lingerfeld is an Oklahoma Supreme Court case. Yes, sir. Ms. Welch, who was with plaintiff that evening, testified that she was right there within seconds, that she found a box out of place first, near the wall second, near the door second, along
I'm
the wall.
I'm sorry to ask so many questions, but sorry. Is this case before us on diversity?
It is on diversity, correct. So, again, we must apply Oklahoma law.
What's the diversity?
Cracker Barrel is a Tennessee corporation. Ms. Prescott is an Oklahoma resident.
Okay. But the only evidence of this box location was that they was found next to the wall, which is not where she slipped.
Correct. Well, and from that again, and this is why the court's treatment of that affidavit is important. Tamlin says near the wall, near the door, along the wall, and out of place. The court just ignores out of place and near the door. So,
but she didn't trip near the door, right?
She did trip near the door.
I saw the video, and she wasn't right at the door. She was, back a little bit. I mean, so if it was at the door, I don't think that would have tripped her.
The video you see is from a camera that hangs over the entrance door. pointing at that last-minute gifts display. That's where she fell. As she turns the corner around that display.
But not at anything placed next to a wall or next to the exit of the door.
No, and again, so another reason...
That's where the box was found.
Another reasonable inference to draw from the fact that Tamlin found a box out of place near the wall was that plaintiff kicks it, so it's protruding out into the aisle, as she testified. When we kick a box, it travels. And that's why I ended up, several feet away.
Is this all theoretical, or did this happen?
What again? The box? Well, yes. Again, Tamlin Welch said that she found the box out of place near the door along the wall.
I understand, but is there any connection between that and the trip and the fall?
Absolutely. The inference the court should draw is box is the box over which she tripped. In this case, the district court said because it was along the wall, it could not have been the ball over which she tripped. The court ignored it.
So that's an inference the court drew. And why isn't the court is not allowed to draw that inference?
Absolutely.
Can we draw the same inference?
Yes, only if you weigh the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant, only when there's other evidence here.
Look, do we know what caused her to trip?
Her testimony is that she tripped on merchandise. It was under a display table protruding out into the aisle. We have the incident report that says, by their own business record, she tripped over a box. We have Tamlin Welch saying, I found a box. The inference the court should have drawn is that she tripped over a box.
Over that box?
Over that box, correct. That Tamlin Welch found and then gave to the store manager.
Well, if they never found a box, ever, but she testified, I tripped on a box protruding out of a behind a display, maybe that would be enough to get at least to the jury.
That would be enough, yes, based on the method of operation case, exactly. So they're placing the box right there. We don't need to prove notice or any evidence as to how long it's been there.
If they didn't have a box, she could be cross-examined. You tripped over a box, where's the box? And that would be a cross-examination question.
Correct.
But it seemed to me that would be a factual question for the jury to weigh.
Correct.
It's not summary judgment.
I didn't realize.
Not summary judgment. Not summary judgment.
22 minutes and 25 seconds
yes.
overtime.
So the court should have relied.
I'm penalized for not calling your time, but it's called.
Okay,
thank
yes,
you.
Sorry.
Thank
you.
Time is up.
Oh, sorry. I apologize.
All right.
The clock goes up after your.
I'm sorry? Okay, I see.
Yeah.
My apologies.
To tell you how many minutes you're over, but thanks.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Amy White and Hillary Clifton on behalf of Defendant Appellee Cracker Barrel Old Country Store, Inc. If I may start with this box that everyone is talking about. Counsel tries to paint the picture that the supposed box is what Ms. Prescott tripped over. With all due respect, Ms. Prescott was asked repeatedly at her deposition about that allegation. Ms. Prescott alleged in her petition that she tripped on a box that stuck out from under a table or stool and which protruded into the walkway of the retail section of the retail store. When asked about that, Ms. Prescott said she didn't know where that allegation came from and she did not know for sure that it was a box, and revised her position to state that she did not know why or over what she allegedly tripped.
Well, she did say, I knew I tripped over something protruding from a display case. Now, what she did say, I can't say for sure whether it was a box or what it was, but I know it was something protruding from a display case. Why wouldn't that be enough?
Because, Your Honor, when you take her testimony as a whole, and as the court in Arrington says that you take the testimony as a whole, for example, if there is a broad proclamation that X happened, when questioned further, and it is nothing more than speculation, conjecture, inconsistency, that is not enough. And how Ms. Prescott...
Well, it's not a conjecture for a woman or a man or anybody to say, I tripped. My toe hit something solid. It was protruding from a display case. None of that is conjecture. That is her factual testimony. So you just can't characterize that as conjecture.
But Ms. Prescott's testimony was, I don't know what I
No, but I do know I tripped over something protruding from under a display case. And presumably, it doesn't matter whether it was a toy truck or a box of Kleenex. If it was something protruding from under a display case, why isn't that enough to go to a jury?
Because once again, when you take her testimony as a whole and all the inconsistencies that she herself creates, and how she got to this allegation that it was Cracker Barrel merchandise, was she said, well, I was in Cracker Barrel, there was merchandise, so who else would have left something there? It's pure speculation that she tripped over Cracker Barrel merchandise.
Well, if somebody says I tripped over a banana peel in the produce department, that person can't say, I know that was a banana sold by that grocery store. It might have been a banana carried in from the car by a shopper. And yet we still let that case go to the jury.
Well, in that situation, Your Honor, there would be evidence as to what actually the alleged offending object was.
Well, here she said what the offending object was. It was a box, and it was protruding from under a display case. I mean, I don't know why we would have to say it's a box of Cracker Jacks or a box of a toy train or something.
But, Your Honor, she did not say that it was a box. When asked about that, she said she did not know if it was a box.
Well, no, but she said it was an object. It was something protruding out from under that display case. I mean, that defines what it was that she tripped over. She didn't just say, I was walking along and all of a sudden I tripped. I don't know why I tripped.
No, she said that I don't know what I tripped over. I don't know what I hung my toe on. She says, I don't know what it was. I didn't say it was a box. I don't know what I hung my toe on. And that is similar to the Gillum case, where the minor child said he did not know what he tripped over. He could not identify it. And the court said, that's not enough. That's speculation.
There's no doubt that if the Gillum case is the controlling case, that you would win, I think. The question is that there's other precedent out there, and we have to balance what to follow.
Yes, Your Honor. There's also Nelson that is instructive here. In that case, Nelson versus Arvest, the plaintiff fell in a bank staircase. She had come in from a sleeting incident, and she said that she tripped or that she fell down the stairs because there was puddle on the stairs. When asked what was that, she could not identify it. She said she thought maybe it was coffee. It was some sort of liquid. But the court said, no, that is not enough. It has to be more than pure speculation as to what you believe it is. And personal beliefs are not enough. The same is true in Arrington, where the plaintiff fell down the staircase at her apartment complex, and she could not identify what caused her to fall. Here we are speaking in the abstract, in hypotheticals of, well, what could it have been? Could it have been this box? What was it? There is no evidence before the court that Ms. Prescott tripped over merchandise of Cracker Barrel.
Now, let's assume that we decide that a reasonable person could think that she tripped over something protruding, whether it's Cracker Barrel or not.
Yes, Your Honor.
I was concerned that there wasn't any evidence to show any negligence of Cracker Barrel because we don't know how long that was there, etc. Counsel has said there is evidence that Ms. Willett, is that her name?
Ms. Wadley?
Wadley, Willett, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Send a text message acknowledging that there was something out of place there. How do you respond to that? That would be an element aside from the manner of doing business theory that he has.
Yes, Your Honor. So if I could take that in a couple steps. First of all, with this text message that much has been made about, what Ms. Wadley said, there was a race car box that Ms. Wadley said when the store would get busy, she would take that box and she would place it up under a table. And Ms. Wadley said that she was going through the store one night in October, and her boot touched or backed up into the box. So at that point, she thought, better safe than sorry. So she started moving that box up under this table. On the night of Ms. Prescott's fall, prior to the fall, The store was starting to get busy. There was a gentleman that Ms. Wadley said she could picture him. He had on khaki pants. He was with his family. He backed up, and she said the heel of his boot tapped that box. And she thought right then and there, time to move the box. She moved the box under the table. And then after the fall, the box was in the same location.
Okay, now divide that up between what she said in the text message and what she testified to later by deposition or affidavit. The way he described it, the text message just indicates that she knew the box was out of place, and it was only a few months later that she came up with the explanation that she put it in the right place afterwards.
No, Your Honor. What happened was Ms. Wadley was testifying as to what happened in October and then what happened on the night of Ms. Prescott's fall. In April, following that, Ms. Wadley texted and was kind of trying to recreate the incident, and she mentioned that box. But at her deposition, she said, I got my dates mixed up. And so in October is when she had tapped that box, and she thought, I don't want it to be a problem. So it's when she started putting it up under the table.
Okay. Now, what
about... No, sorry. Go ahead.
What about the course of business, the business practice problem
yes.
here, that he's saying that there could be liability, maybe not strict liability, but it's pretty close to strict liability, when you have the business model that Cracker Barrel has of just stuffing a lot of merchandise on shelves in crowded aisles and so on, so that makes it so likely that you're going to trip that the business practice itself causes liability. How do you respond
yes,
to that?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, first, that argument was not raised in the trial court.
Okay, that's right.
But even if it was, that is
was
not...
Was there anything close to that raised in the trial court? Did they not talk about the crowded shelves?
They may very well have talked about that, but as far as the arguments that they're trying to advance here today, that Lingerfeld makes us this... self-insure, basically, because we sell product. Well, taking counsel's argument on its face, any retailer that sells merchandise would therefore be responsible. And you started out your questioning as, is this a res ipsa case? Is it a res ipsa case? And counsel said no. But his arguments differ.
Did he rely at all on Lingerfeld in the district court? How did he, if he did, what argument did he make based on Lingerfeld?
I don't recall Lingerfeld being addressed in the trial court. But even if you do apply the mode of operation doctrine of this case, it does not change the outcome at all. For example, in Lingerfeld, in that case, they were able to identify the offending object, strawberries. And in that situation, it was the mode of operation itself that created this hazard.
Not putting them in plastic or something like that.
Right. Well, in that situation, they had strawberries. And these strawberries, the wrapping machine was broke. And so they didn't take and cover the strawberries. And they had noticed that if the strawberries aren't covered, someone might drop a strawberry in another part of the store. And guess what? That's what happened. There was actual evidence that that could occur. So this is not strawberries being dropped all over the store. Once again, the fundamental flaw with Ms. Prescott's case...
Well, even in those cases, there's got to be evidence that the store knew that the strawberry was there, right?
Yes.
Because otherwise, I can go to Costco, drink a Pepsi as I'm walking down the aisle, spill it, somebody slips on it. I'm not the one who's responsible, even though I spill the Pepsi. The store is, without even knowing it's there, right?
No.
Right. So it doesn't work that way.
Well,
the store has to know. But let me ask you about Gillum, if you
don't. Yes, Your Honor.
Because I agree with Judge Ebell. If this is Gillum, you win. But is this Gillum? I mean, Gillum, somebody, probably a cowboy or somebody, was stepping over a fence at a race course. And as he steps on the other side, he slips. And he said, well, I fell because there was either a... the grass, or because there was a hidden object, or he had some theory about why he fell. This is not that case. This is not a case where a woman has a theory about why she fell. This is a case where she's at a store and she testifies, this is why I fell. There was an item protruding from under a aisle or whatever, and I tripped on it and fell.
Your Honor, I would say that this is Gillum.
In Gillum, the court said the defendant wins because the plaintiff is unable to prove what the hidden why he fell.
Yes, Your Honor, but the same is true here. When you apply Arrington, when you look at the testimony as a whole, you can't just take one broad pronouncement of, I fell over X. And then when asked about it repeatedly, the answer is, I don't know what I fell over. I don't know what I fell over.
In Arrington, the plaintiff was walking down a flight of stairs. She fell. She said, quote, it was dark and I couldn't see. She didn't know what caused her to fall. There's no evidence of a causation, so the court said, I'm sorry, we can't rule in your favor where there's, you might have just tripped and fallen for all we know. And that's not this case.
But Your Honor, I believe it is this case because mm-hmm. the same is true that Ms. Prescott cannot say what she fell over. It could be just as likely that, with all due respect, she tripped over her feet. It could be that she tripped over her handbag.
Well, it could be that under all those theories, except that's not what she said.
Well, Ms. Prescott could not identify that what she tripped over. And once again, when asked what it was, she said, I have no idea. And it goes back to she assumed that it was Cracker Barrel merchandise.
Is that a fair statement? Did she say, I assume it?
Well,
because
she said,
if it is, it seems to me you win. But I didn't read it that way.
So when asked how she knew the unidentified item belonged to Cracker Barrel, she said, well, we was in their store and it was all merchandise, so I suppose it was, had to be theirs. And who else would have left something under there?
Why wouldn't that be a jury question?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why wouldn't that be a jury question?
Because once again, if it's speculation and conjecture.
But and the speculation is, I fell, I don't know why I fell. Maybe there was something on the dark stairway. Maybe there was something else. Maybe there was something on the other side of the rail. But here, she said, it was some physical object. It wasn't my shoes. It wasn't my skirt. It was something protruding out from under the display cabinet.
Once again, Your Honor, she said when pressed on that she did not know what she fell over. And once again, the inference is that she could have fallen over her own feet. She could have fallen over something that someone might have dropped right in front of her at that moment. And if I may, before my time runs out, I would like to also move to the last element. We talked briefly about causation and breach of duty, but also open and obvious. If the condition is open and obvious, then there is not a duty. And in this situation, the trial court could have also found in Cracker Barrel summary judgment on open and obvious because Ms. Prescott herself testified that as soon as she and her friend walked into the store, they saw stuff that they thought was everywhere. So you can't have this mode of operation that, well, we think that the store itself is a problem when the plaintiff herself has testified that we saw the nature of the store and we continued and we, in essence, appreciated any danger that she alleges was posed.
Kind of assumption of risk, so to speak.
Yes, open and obvious, yes.
Open and obvious. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Counselor excused. The case is submitted. Court is in recess till tomorrow morning.